nail on the head. These are REMPs. They are not combat veterans. They are not men that fought in a battle or have suffered at the hands of any administration. These men were the guys that got the what they call them back in the NAM. They had them cookie socials where they had them ice. They call them, I don't know, they had these, they talked about them. I never met one. I never saw one of these ice cream dollies that used to, you know, give off USO cookies and stuff like that. I never met one. Not in all of
my time.
That's
because they were too busy servicing the officers behind the building.
They were doing it for those REMPs. And that's what I'm speaking of. And your husband wasn't a REMP, I'm sure of that. You remind me so much of my dear Glenda. She knows me better than I know myself, and she tries sometimes to calm me down. It is hard to calm down in these days. It is very, very hard because I watch, and I'm watching dear hearts, wonderful people, being led astray.
Yep.
And the truth is, those VFW members that were before George the
well, to be fair, that VFW meeting was also addressed by Senator Clinton, and I think a couple of the other heavy hitter presidential candidates were there as well. So,
but Bob,
no, Preston, I thought you were going to say something there for a minute.
Well, I guess there's also a financial pressure as well. You know, I think some people are afraid to speak out against the war for fear of being, you know, losing a rank or being denied a benefit, or, you know, there's always that concern as well. And people also just trying to convince themselves of things, rationalizing things that they did, and they're clinging to that rationalization because they fear if they let it go, you know, there's just going to be all sorts of uncomfortable truths. It was interesting. I heard one veteran call into the Dr. Laura show.
Ooh, and Dr. Laura Schlesinger?
Yes.
Oh, your poor eardrums, Preston. I feel so bad.
I tune in every now and again. And he actually ended up breaking down and talking about all the killing he had done in the war. And he didn't specify which one, but I think it was likely the Vietnam War. And, you know, Dr. Laura was there and talking about how it was a war of self-defense. You know, she provides those rationalizations.
Oh.
That's what Hannity's job is, the rationalizations towards people who he knows are in a very psychologically vulnerable position. And he's going to flatter them constantly to try to win their favor and then provide them with all these justifications for the plans of these, our warlords, basically. And actually, I heard something recently that the Vietnam War Memorial, I think as it is, it's a couple hundred meters long. And if it were to include the deaths of the Vietnamese, it would be 5 miles long.
You know, I've thought about this most of my adult life. I have wrestled with this idea that if those human beings that we slaughtered in that filthy war, and that war was filthy, no one can give any justification for it. No one could ever tell me. I knew personally Master Gunnery Sergeant Valdez. I knew him as a friend when I served with him in the 1st Marines, the last Marine to leave Vietnam, the last American to leave Vietnam was Master Gunnery Sergeant.
Oh, really?
And he was a personal friend of mine. Okay.
Oh, wow.
He was one of those guys that was stepping on the hands of that throng that was trying to board that helicopter. He was the man that was doing that job, He and I served together at Camp Pendleton after the war. I have a dear friend that lives very close to me within a few hours' drive that served as one of those men that worked in one of those relocation camps at Camp Pendleton.
Okay.
Where the Vietnamese boat people were taken to. The ones that Georgie talked about. Okay?
Yeah, yeah. My barber actually happens to be a Vietnamese immigrant, and she's great. And I was wondering, Bob, if you knew any veterans who have been back to Vietnam.
I don't personally, and I cannot afford to travel back there because if I did, it wouldn't be the cost in capital, in money that would destroy me. I would have to look at a landscape of people, of human beings that have risen from the ashes of that filthy war and built themselves a nation. They are not anything other than us.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve.
Saks quarterly sales increased 15%. Analysts say the upscale clothing store has cons. I'm Michael Coleman.
Kids, it's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 32 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Actually, I've gotten a couple of emails wanting to know, is Peter Godbold really your name? And I will tell you, yes, I am Peter Godbold. And welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. We are indeed live. I know you're wondering, today is Wednesday, August 22nd, and we are indeed live. I think we have fought the last of the battles with Embark. I was contacted by the actual field representative from Embark today who assures me that the little central office that services this area is fully functional, and to their credit, I will say that the data rates are up and the dial tone has been consistently on today. It is very hot here, though, another record breaker for this date, and air conditioners are running full-time in this neck of the woods. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. That's strictlyconfidentialradio.com. There you'll find links to all of the guests, as well as the main site, where you can find out about all of the progressive programming on the horn. One moment, I need to make a small adjustment for the studio here. And let's see if that helps that, Agnes. Thank you. And you'll find out about the other programs. And there are links to the audio archives to all of the guests that have been on the show, as well as the Strictly Confidential MySpace page, and also to all of the music that you hear on the show. Again, that's strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Again, I believe I told you the last time we were live, it's been a couple of days, we have had a generator donated. We're going to be running the show for power interruptions. We can keep the show on the air, and that was a very generous gift. Thank you. We're going to be running some tests on the generator over the next couple of days. We'll actually be running programs completely powered from the generator so that we can get it through its break-in period, and I can do the first oil change, etc. And We have a guest this evening, and I'm very glad to have him along tonight. His name is Fred Mason, Fred D. Mason III, actually, and he's running for Baltimore City Council for District 11. He located Mr. Mason through the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, and that is located at victoryfund.org. Again, it's an important site, victoryfund.org. The GLBT Victory Fund provides technical and financial and strategic support to openly GLBT candidates and officials, and it is the only national organization to commit itself to increasing the number of openly GLBT folks in public office at the federal, state, and local levels. It is the nation's largest LGBT political action committee, and it's also the nation's largest non-connected, one of the nation's largest non-connected PACs. They've been around for 16 years, and they've increased the number of openly LGBT elected and appointed officials from 49 to over 500. And as we have said previously on this program, we can constantly count on the right to attack us, and we can constantly, or rather the left, or the right, Lord of such, how long has it been since I've been on the air? The right attacks, and the left acquiesces and says as little as possible, or at least tries to straddle the fence. If we're going to do this, folks, we have to do it ourselves. I strongly encourage you to stop by victoryfund.org. You can look at GLBT folks who are running for office all over the country for offices from everything from city to state. We've had guests who've come through the Victory Fund from Florida, from Minnesota, and tonight we'll have Mr. Mason from Maryland. And we're glad to have him along. Mr. Mason is a native Baltimorean, and he's a product of the Baltimore City Public School Systems. He's lived in Reservoir Hill for the past 7 years with his partner, Philip. He has very, very deep roots in the Baltimore community. He grew up in a family of public service. His grandfather was chairman of the Public Planning Commission, or rather the Planning Commission. His grandmother was an educator in the public schools. His mother was an attorney for the city and is still a hearing officer for the school district. His father is a president of the Maryland and District of Columbia AFL-CIO. He attended Baltimore Polytechnic Institute and went on to earn a bachelor's degree in political economy from Tulane and a master's degree in public policy from Georgetown, and a master's degree in architecture from Morgan. Wow. Mr. Mason has worked in local, state, and federal governments through internships with a congressman and a senator, and he's been involved with the state of Maryland's Office of Capital Budgeting. He's worked on major projects like building the Hippodrome, the Inner Harbor Welcome Center, the Reginald Lewis Museum. He's also been with a company called Banks Contracting. There he helped to manage the construction of the first building at the University of Maryland, Baltimore Biopark. He's currently with an architectural firm that works primarily on education products. He's done community service for quite a period of time. He's was involved with the Sandtown Habitat for Humanity. He's involved with teams from HERO, which is an organization that walks the street at night providing condoms and information counseling to people to stay safe and to stay healthy. He is a lifelong member of St. James Episcopal Church on Lafayette Square, and he participates in that church and also in the program of visiting the sick and working in the food pantry. He's dedicated to improving the lives of the people of Baltimore, and he is endorsed by a list of organizations longer than my arm. In fact, Mr. Mason is listed on the front page, the opening page of victoryfund.org, as one of the races to watch. So we are very pleased to have Mr. Mason here. And Mr. Mason, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be on.
I'm delighted to have you here too, sir, and thank you for bearing with us. We had to reschedule him a couple of times. We had some technical problems, but they seem to be worked out now, and thank you for your understanding, Mr. Mason.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We, there's so much to talk about. We are in the process of hopefully having each and every individual from the Victory Fund site on this program. We've taken a position here that we're pretty much going to have to do it ourselves if we get it done at all, because of the, shall we say, middle of the road and straddling the fence position of so many of the, at least the federal candidates. Mr. Mason, how is it in your neck of the woods? You know, I live in the South, so I tend to see things fairly grimly. How are things up in Maryland? I see that you're a member of a church and you've been with your partner 7 years. Is that well accepted there? And is it also well accepted among the groups who endorse you?
It is. I'd say things are pretty good in Maryland. As you probably know, there's a marriage equality suit that has been heard by our state's highest court, the Court of Appeals, but a decision has not been rendered, so we're hopeful that will go in favor of marriage equality, but we're not sure. Certainly going door to door, people are concerned first and foremost about effectiveness, and sexuality comes up rarely, if at all.
Interesting.
The Episcopal Church in Maryland has been really great. I'm the head of the local chapter of Integrity, which is an organization within the Episcopal Church that works for full inclusion of GLBT people, and we've been, I'd say, successful and accepted here in the Diocese of Maryland, and we just try to maintain a strong presence.
Very interesting. And how about with your constituents? I understand that your area, the district, is primarily African American, but it also includes Baltimore's heavily gay neighborhood called Mount Vernon. Does that tend to be an upscale neighborhood? You know, they keep telling everybody we're all
the
rich.
11th, the 11th is a very diverse district, both racially, economically, and also in terms of sexual orientation. Sometimes Philip is with me when I'm out campaigning. I introduce him to people as my partner. No one bats an eye.
Very interesting.
Really, at this point in Baltimore politics, really concerned about what you can do for them.
Very interesting. Well, I noticed one of your platforms is strengthening neighborhoods, and one of those sub-platforms is to reduce the prevalence of vacant properties. Now, am I hearing that there are a lot of vacant properties because of employment?
There are a lot of vacant properties primarily because of depopulation. Baltimore's population peaked shortly after World War II, when we were a hub of ship and aircraft building, at around 900,000 people. And it now stands at around 635,000 people. So that population loss is at the root of much of the vacant housing. But also there, from where I stand, hasn't been a strong enough push to move people from renting towards home ownership and renovating a lot of the vacant houses. Citywide, there are about 40,000 vacant structures, if you can imagine that. 10,000 of them are owned by the city of Baltimore, but the city government currently is doing an abysmal job of getting them back into productive use.
I see.
So that's where we need to start with rebuilding neighborhoods, is with the property that has in many cases been purchased with taxpayer money and is now just still sitting there vacant.
I see. And I'm saying here that you're hoping to push that through as a way for people to own their first home. I think that's an excellent idea.
Thank you.
Also, I wonder... Go ahead.
We have a lot of people who who are rooted in communities, but they've been renting for 10, 15, 20 years and have roots but don't have an ownership interest and are vulnerable when the owner of their property or someone else has plans for the neighborhood that don't include them. And, you know, expanding the number of people who are rooted and have an ownership interest really strengthens neighborhoods and makes them better able to stand up and stand together.
I see. Well, I should point out to our listeners that the toll-free lines are actually open if you'd like to ask Mr. Mason a question. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, head on. That's 877, the number 4, head on. Or if you have an unlimited long-distance calling plan, please use 304-658-3333. Also want to point out to you, and by the way, Fred, we're posting this link in our chat room. We have an active chat room that I keep an eye on when guests are on the air. We're posting the link to your direct website. In addition to being listed on victoryfund.org, Mr. Mason has his own website where you can probably find out additional information, which is fredmason3.com. That's fredmason3.com. I think I got that right, didn't I?
You got that exactly right, fredmason3.com, and people can also make contributions on that website.
Very important. And again, regarding the Victory Fund site, you can also make contributions to a large number of candidates there, Mr. Mason included. I checked that out earlier. And whether or not there is a GLBT person running in your area, I encourage you to support the folks who are listed on Victory Fund. They're important to us all. You know, we have to start at the bottom rung on this. Nobody gets elected to Congress, you know, as in their first turn. And Mr. Mason may very well be headed to Congress, especially with a background like the one I'm seeing here. Are you well accepted then amongst both the African-American community and the gay community? Then there seems to be no problem with endorsements either. I'd say you're doing fairly well.
Yes, I am doing well, and I do feel accepted in the African-American community, which obviously includes lots of GLBT people, as well as in more heavily GLBT neighborhoods. So, you know, I certainly feel acceptance as well as a strong appeal in many parts of the district.
I have a question for you, Fred, from the chat room. This particular person is asking, what is your vision for the housing problems in the current downturn? I think you would relate that then to employment for your area.
In terms of, they definitely go together, ability to own a home and employment. We need to, in Baltimore, correct the mismatch that exists between the skills of the population and the skills needed for the jobs that are being created. We have, like many cities, lost practically all of our manufacturing, much of our blue-collar employment, and now are in an economy that's driven very much by the healthcare and biotechnology industry. There is also a lot of construction activity in Baltimore related to those industries, as well as residential and commercial development around the waterfront. So we need to make sure people are gaining skills in the construction trades, and that while we're building these biotech parks, we're also making sure that people are gaining at least the entry-level lab technician skills, things like that, to jump on those jobs when they become available.
Fred, I'm noticing that that your father is indeed involved with the AFL-CIO. I will tell you that this network is very much pro-union and pro-fair page, fair wages and fair compensation for... I don't know if that makes us anti-Walmart or not, but it darn near pretty much...
It
puts us in that neck of the woods for sure. I would think coming from a home like that that you are interested in unions and fair wages also. How is that in your area?
It could be stronger. I mean, a lot of the jobs that have been lost through the years were good union jobs. There was an automotive plant in Baltimore that's gone. Bethlehem Steel is, you know, next to nothing, a shell of its former self. The shipyards are very automated now, so a lot of those jobs have gone, and you know, the push is to organize in the service and technology industries that have taken their place, and you know, I absolutely support that. Baltimore City was actually the first city to pass a living wage ordinance for publicly funded contracts. It could probably use some updating to index that, as well as to apply it to projects that are getting city incentives. We often, I'm sure like many places, use tax breaks as an economic development tool. I'm not sure how effective they are in terms of rate of return, but if we are using them, then those developers and building owners need to also be subject to the living wage ordinance for the lower paid folks in those buildings, such as janitors and other support staff.
I'm noticing on your site, Mr. Mason, that you're for supporting historic communities and preservation of historic properties, and that includes homeowners to maintain historic properties. You know, that is so important. You know, so many people will actually bring funds into an area when there is a vibrant cultural heritage. Is that a lack of funding? Are your historic sites not being maintained well there now? For you to bring that up, it would make me suspect that.
It's that, and it's more historic neighborhoods than specifically historic sites. Many of the vacant structures are, you know, magnificent architecturally and are in neighborhoods that are historic, that were sometimes built around squares that were laid out by Olmsted. You know, they have that kind of historic value to them, but they're vacant and rotting. So we need to invest in those areas, and when we do have folks who own these older homes, they sometimes need some help to keep them up. That could be in the form of a low interest or no interest loan. That could be in the form of a tax credit. But we need to give people some help, some incentive to maintain a home that's 100, 150 years old in good condition.
I see. Does the city also own some homes that are in that lineage, that are about that old, that could possibly be reopened?
It does. This district stretches from the Inner Harbor area of Baltimore north towards the neighborhood I live in, which is called Reservoir Hill, near Druid Hill Park. And overall, it is, you know, one of the older parts of the city and contains lots of significant neighborhoods, significant collections of buildings that really make a historic fabric that we need to keep up.
I imagine with your background in being an architect, that is something, I bet you see things every day that you think it's a shame that's just going to waste.
Yeah, I do. I mean, the home the home that I live in was built about actually exactly 90 years ago, 1917. And it's, you know, it's relatively small, but, you know, the level of detail that was present then with the marble steps and marble at the base of the house and some, not much, but some stained glass. And that was the level of construction for fairly basic housing 90 years ago. And there's a lot of that that's being lost due to lack of upkeep, due to vacancy. A lot of those original details just get looted in some cases and are just gone.
Well, Fred, from your tone of voice, I can tell that you genuinely do love that area. It shows in your tone of voice. We have a caller who with a question for you. We have Susan. Susan, welcome to Strictly Confidential.
Hi, Peter.
Hi,
Susan. This is kind of a little out of the question, but there is a company called MIB, the MIB Group. And anytime somebody wants a job, anytime they apply for a job, they sign releases saying, you can check into my background. Now, the first thing any employer does is they go check with MIB. And what MIB does, it gives them information on all of your medical records.
Hmm.
Which means if you've been sick in the past, you're not going to be getting a job. And I was wondering how you felt about this type of thing.
I feel that it really provides an opportunity for discrimination that people don't even know is happening. I mean, this is, you know, the first I've heard of it. When I think of background checks, I think of criminal background check. I think of a, you know, credit check if you're working in the financial industry. But I don't think of medical background.
I didn't find out about it either until last year, and I was just floored.
Yeah, as am I. You know, it sounds like something that needs to be dealt with nationally. I'd certainly...
That's on a federal level.
On a federal level. I would certainly work on it. Not with medical background checks, but with trying not to cut people off at the door. There's a bill now before the Baltimore City Council to not ask on the job application about prior prison sentences or convictions, so that people don't have that barrier before they even get to an interview.
Perhaps you could talk to someone and maybe get some word changes in there that would include medical.
Yeah, I certainly will. I'm forward to learn of that, because I don't think that's, you know, a proper thing for a background check.
Anyway, if you want more information, the website I'm talking about is www.mib.com.
MIB.
And you can go there. Yeah.
Okay.
Medical insurance. Yeah. Anyway, I thought I'd bring that up. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling, Susan.
I hope you get elected.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susan. And again, the site that Susan was referring to was MIB.com. Was it .com, Fred?
I think that's what she said.
Thank you, yes. And, Fred, we have an additional question. This comes to us via production chat from one of our listeners who, I believe, phoned it into production chat or phoned it into the studio. It's a question regarding something called Bärenschmidt Manor. And the question is, do you know the history or of this place? It's apparently in a district called Mayfield. Can you tell us about that? It's one of our listeners named Billy.
I'm not aware of the building. I am somewhat aware of the family. There's a wing of a nursing home, a rather old one called Keswick, that's named after the Bärenschmidts. Mayfield is a neighborhood in northeast Baltimore, outside of the 11th district, but I'm familiar with the neighborhood, but not with the structure. But it sounds like one of many historic structures that needs more awareness. The very neglected one in the 11th district is the Upton Mansion, which is in a state of disrepair. It was a school for a time, but is now vacant. And I'm sure there are others. But I'll certainly learn more about the Bärenschmidt Center.
Billy is actually in Maryland, just FYI. I don't know if he's in District 11 or not, but he's one of our listeners from that area. Someone else in production chat points out that that's in some place called the Old Brew District. I guess you used to have or still have a lot of breweries in the area?
Brewers Hill has remnants of breweries, which are not serving as breweries anymore. The National Bohemian Brewery is now a mixed-use project, but it is still there, and the neon sign of Mr. Bo is there and lighted up again and visible for a pretty good distance.
Interesting. That reminds me of an area in the Tampa St. Pete area. There's a district or an old town that's pretty much engulfed by the city these days called Ybor City, and it's full of old cigar factories that don't make cigars anymore, and they've been taken over by nightclubs, entertainment, I guess you could call it bohemian also. I'm wondering, too, about the you're talking about treatment here, treatment on demand regarding folks staying clean. I know that's important to so many people. The gay community, too, you know, there's a huge problem that we read about regarding a particular drug, meth, in the gay community. There are reports that say that it's really impacting people taking their meds. But, of course, that would, anytime you're chasing any kind of a drug, that would impact taking any kind of your meds or taking care of yourself. What are you looking at regarding treatment on demand and helping folks out like that?
I'm looking at that if someone is struggling with addiction, if they get to a point when they want to make a change, then some place needs to be ready to receive them at that moment, whether it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon or 2 o'clock in the morning. And that's not currently the case. We say we have treatment on demand, but it's not really a good 24-hour referral and intake, which is what's needed so that the services are there when people make that decision, because they may not make it again.
Well, that's absolutely true. There's the magic of the moment when it comes to someone seeking help. And indeed, if the moment does not provide you with a real alternative to get help, that moment can very well vanish. completely agree. Looking further at this area of helping folks out, I'm seeing that you're interested in reintegrating ex-offenders into legitimate work. Now, I'm not sure how Maryland handles this, but I will tell you that Florida, where I'm located, is a one of only, if I'm not mistaken, three, perhaps four states in the entire country that attempts to permanently disenfranchise a felon even after they have served their time or paid back their fines or restitution or completed probation, to completely tries, and this is part of the old Jim Crow bit, to completely separate them from the voting process. In other words, it is near impossible, read that impossible, to get your voting rights back. How does that work in Maryland? How do you feel that voting helps reintegrate an ex-offender into legitimate work?
As of this July, people who have completed their sentence and or parole and probation, people who have completed their involvement with the Department of Corrections, are now eligible to vote. And that just went into effect this July, which was in time for people in Baltimore City to register to vote for the September primary. So,
very good.
I think it does make a difference. That's a first step in reintegrating people into society, is restoration of voting rights. What is really even more important is employment. And that path needs to start before people are released and continue afterwards. I hear too often from people I talk to, they've completed their sentence, and strictly because they have a record, no matter what kind of job they're going for, they just don't get past that. I mentioned earlier, we're, in terms of city employment, are trying to eliminate that. Some other cities have made it a requirement that city contractors not ask about people's felony conviction status. Doesn't stop people from doing background checks that are related to a specific job, but it does take down that immediate barrier.
Well, that's a very good point you make about employment being even more important, because when a person is hungry or trying to figure out if they're going to be able to pay their rent, that's an awful burden. You really can't worry too much about who's running for office or what they have to say or your right to vote when you can't even find resources around you to live.
Right, and that's where you get these high recidivism rates from. People come out, they attempt to make it and can't, and a good percentage of them revert to the behaviors that they know, which got them in trouble in the first place.
Yes.
And end up back in prison.
Well, this is very true. If it's a matter of having money to eat or not, certainly a person is going to get involved in selling drugs or any number of illegal activities rather than starve. And of course, assistance programs, especially for single people, if you don't happen to have a child, especially if you're male, are pretty grim.
Yeah, they are. They are. It's difficult, as you said, for single men with criminal records to make it.
Yes, I've seen that time and time again in the gay community when I was living in a much larger city, that when a person there was very little they could do, and you end up in situations where people are you know, selling sexual favors for a place to sleep, and which of course feeds into the whole HIV circle of more infections and crime. It's people. Yeah, we really need some strong right to work laws around this country, it would seem to me.
Yeah, we do.
I'm wondering
if we need to, you know, enforce the anti-discrimination laws that we do have, and you know, in terms of ex-offenders, people have paid their debt to society, then you know, they need a chance to rejoin it.
I see. Tell me about the other people who are running for the same seat that you're running for. That would be a Baltimore City Council, District 11. What are the others like, and how many of them are they?
There are 8 others for a total of 9 candidates, which is a very large number. Only one of us will win. The seat is currently held by Councilman Kiefer Mitchell, who is running for mayor, so it's an open seat. There will be a new council person no matter what. Going hopefully in alphabetical order, the other 8 candidates are Karen Brown, who is a Presbyterian minister at Madison Avenue Presbyterian Church, and she runs their Family Life Center and has done some good programs in the neighborhood. Rita Collins, who I don't know much about. She has not showed up at any of the candidate forums, and there have been many throughout the campaign. William Cole, who was appointed to fill the remainder of someone's term in the Maryland House of Delegates and then lost his seat in the subsequent election following some redistricting. Adam Meister, who is a community activist and internet entrepreneur, lives in Reservoir Hill as well. Nick Mosby, who works for Verizon, which is a large telecommunications company.
Yes.
Dana Owens, who is also gay, so we have 2 gay candidates in this race, and he owns a local nightclub, Club Buns.
Well, for whatever reason, he is not listed as being approved by the Victory Fund. So
no,
we might not want to go there. I don't know what's up with that.
Well, I attended their training in Chicago. As far as I know, he was invited, but did not attend. Their main thing is picking people who can win.
Well, that's exactly
so
what I'm seeing.
You know,
there.
They took a look at, you know, ability to gather support from a variety of sources and decided I was a viable candidate, and I'm very glad they did.
Well, according to Victory Fund, it's really down to 2 main candidates, and you are one of those 2. Does that sound like a fair assessment, according to Victory Fund?
Yes, that is a fair assessment. And there are 2 other candidates I didn't get to. Don't leave anybody out.
Oh, please. Yes, of course.
Brandon Thornton, who is an attorney. He works in the public defender's office. And Warren Zussman, who is retired. I believe he worked in advertising.
Well, that's very interesting. Who is the other candidate that it's down to? Is it the gay fellow?
No, God, it is right. Not. It is the other. My main competition is Bill Cole, who what is the former delegate, worked for the current congressman, Elijah Cummings, and he's drawn some pretty substantial support. So that's my main competition.
I see. Well, nonetheless, Victory Fund has you listed as, and I would have to take their word for it, simply because they've been around for 16 years. Surely they've been through this before where there have been two gay candidates, or they must really believe that you can, in fact, win.
Yes, they do. They do, or they would not be involved. And they've been involved. They've been incredibly helpful with fundraising, which is very important. You need money to get the message out. They've been great with staff support. Their political director is from Maryland, has worked on some campaigns here, most recently Senator Cardin's campaign, so she certainly knows Baltimore and can assess the situation.
Well, here again is another endorsement, if you will, for our listeners to have a look at victoryfund.org, and that is that the people that you'll see listed there, in fact, are running at the head of their races and are credible candidates. So if you do choose to send money, even if it's folks that are not in your area, if you find someone that you can get behind there, you're not throwing it away. You're throwing it at someone who's in
a
viable race.
They have a very rigorous process and a very high success rate. I believe over 70%, which is a testament to their ability to pick winners and to support them.
Well, you certainly sound like a winner to me. Tell me some more about your educational platform. I'm noticing that there's not enough education funding. You're saying devote a majority of each year's budget to increases in education. Is that being underfunded now?
I believe so. The city of Baltimore the city of Baltimore devotes about 11% of the city budget to the public school system, and it provides about 20% of the funding for the public school system. Most other jurisdictions in Maryland provide between 40 and 50% of the funding for their public school systems. So Baltimore City lags well behind in terms of local government commitment to the public schools. So the city's budget, like all budgets, pretty much goes up from year to year, and I do believe that a majority of that year-to-year increase needs to go towards our public schools until we approach the level of commitment of other jurisdictions.
Well, you mentioned
budget is your statement of priorities, and what our budget says now is that education is not a priority.
Well, I have to agree with you, and judging from what I'm seeing here, since you are in fact mentioning to make sure that adults gain the skills essential to compete in Baltimore's economy, I would expect that adults are even being more ignored than the regular school system. Is that the case? Job training is really very, very poor?
It's spotty. It's inconsistent. Sometimes employers or prospective employers do work with the City Office of Employment Development to do job training while projects are under construction. Some of that is happening with the East Baltimore Biotech Park, which is centered around Johns Hopkins University. Not happening on the west side, so it's spotty. What is also insufficiently promoted are GED classes. In the 11th district, around 30% of adults don't have a high school diploma, which really locks people into poverty since those good paying jobs that didn't require a lot of education are pretty much gone.
A very good point.
You at least need that to even get in the game, and then you need some skills beyond the high school diploma to get a good job. But, you know, that's a minimum qualification.
Well, is there a system of community colleges in the area? It, at least in Florida, when a person gets a GED, they are pretty much automatically able to apply at a community college. Is it the same in your area?
There is a system of community colleges, and the GED classes are sponsored through the community colleges, and it's mainly a factor of organization. We need to get people organized to take advantage of what is available. If you can get a group of, I believe it's, I don't know whether it's 10 or 20 students signed up, you can get a GED instructor for that class. It needs to be promoted much more than it is in community associations, in churches, in places that have the ability to reach out and organize people to enroll in these classes.
Well, that's a great point. You know, so many people attend churches, they may very well have a college education or high school education, but they will have people in their families who could make use of a program like that. And how else are they going to find out except through a member of the church? It's an excellent idea.
Right, and there are, you know, other types of information about job training programs that do exist, about job fairs, about companies that are looking. Last night I was talking to a gentleman who works at a company that is, you know, willing to take people on and train them to be machinists, to be welders, and they're having difficulty finding people. And, you know, it's part of the job of city council to get that information out.
Very interesting. If you want to get in a question for Mr. Mason, the toll-free is 877, the number 4, head-on. Mr. Mason, I want to ask you what you mean by holistic. In your campaign issues, you're mentioning a holistic and long-term approach to crime prevention. I'm not sure just what that means.
What I had in mind with that there is a program in Boston called Operation Ceasefire, and they managed to cut the murder rate by 70%. And that program basically brought all the stakeholders to the table. So you got community groups involved, you got churches involved, you got social service providers involved, you got educational institutions involved, and the, you know, guiding principles were to provide opportunity so people could get out of criminal lifestyle or never get in the first place, and to also make it very clear that criminal activity, that drug dealing, that gang involvement is destroying the community, and to hear that from people in the community, and to set standards and hold folks accountable. So, you know, the carrot is you'll have lots of support if you want to go on the right path and stay on it. But if, after all that, you still want to violate our community, then there's going to be consequences for it. So that's what I meant by a holistic approach. It's not strictly a law enforcement problem. It's a community problem, and you have to involve and heal the entire community.
Well, I want to ask also regarding public transportation. You know, the more buses a person has to transfer to get to their place of work, the less likely they are to make it on time. And in fact, every candidate that we've had from Florida to Minnesota, and now you have mentioned public transportation in part of their platform. How is that in your area?
It is not terribly good or coordinated, and what you said is absolutely true. The more transfers involved, the longer the commute is, and less likely people are to get to work. The public transportation is a state agency, the Maryland Transportation Administration, but it is heavily concentrated in the Baltimore area. And I think we need to, you know, look at short-term and long-term solutions. In the short term, we need to look at ways to improve convenience and reliability of bus transportation, to recognize that it is an employment and economic development tool to have a good transportation system that gets people to work, and to look beyond fare box collections and look to, you know, revenue increases that happen when people can get connected with better employment and keep and hold a job and get promoted, pay more taxes and contribute more to society. I think now we take a narrow view of how public transit is financed, and we mandate that you have to recover a certain amount from the fare box, and if that doesn't happen, the services get cut, and that's a short-sighted way of looking at it. So in the short term, we need to really focus on the bus system. In the long term, rail can certainly deliver more people more reliably. But a comprehensive rail system in the Baltimore area has a projected cost of around $12 billion. So that's clearly a long-term plan, and one that has to be an overall transportation priority for the state, to place public transportation on a higher level of priority than road building, which is the priority now, and which tends not to solve much of anything.
Interesting point someone just made in the chat room, that you're talking about an infrastructure that we all pay for, we all share, and this person is pointing out that, after all, crime is a symptom of poverty and inequality, which I think is a very good point. Mr. Mason, I don't want to let you go, and thank you, by the way, for spending so much time with us, but I don't want to let you go without just opening it up to you. I've asked you a number of questions, and you responded beautifully to all of them, but surely there are probably points that you would like to get across that we haven't mentioned, and feel free to do so.
I think we've actually covered the three big things for me, which are education, rebuilding neighborhoods, and improving public safety. Overall, we need to shift the focus of government to investing in people and investing in the neighborhoods where those people live to have a successful city. We've done good job investing downtown. We have a beautiful waterfront area, but you can go not too far from there, and it's like you're in a different universe. So we have to close those gaps. We have to invest in people. We have to have an educated population, make that a major priority so that people have the opportunities that flow from education. And, you know, that's the foundation. That's where the focus needs to be to have a successful city. That's what I intend to work on as a city council member, and to do all I can to close the gaps that exist between the haves and the have-nots, between the thriving neighborhoods and the struggling neighborhoods in the 11th District, to bring us all together and to raise the bar, to raise the people and places on the bottom so that we can all be successful together.
Very well said, Mr. Mason. You know, so often we hear the right side of the fence going on about what's good for business and what's good for investment and trickle-down economics, which is a huge joke. And here you are talking about what's good for all of us and all of us fitting together in a way that's mutually beneficial so that we can all exist, and I admire you for that. Well done.
Thank you.
And I'd also like to thank your partner, Philip. I spoke with Philip over the phone when we were trying
yes,
to
yes, he has
get...
been wonderful, helping in a myriad number of ways throughout the campaign, and he actually leads a group here in Baltimore called Be More Empowered, which is about empowering young GLBT folks to really take control and take positions of leadership in their own lives and in their communities. And he's been doing that kind of work for a very long time. And, you know, he's as committed to public service as I am.
Well, he's a delightful fellow to talk to, and we've exchanged emails. I can see that he's your right hand, and
yes.
My
yes,
very
he
best.
Is. In fact, we just celebrated 9 years together.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And nine years together, and 1 year of marriage. Last August, we went to Toronto and got married, and then came back, and the following week had a religious ceremony at our church.
Excellent. What a wonderful story. Did family tell us about that? None of us here live. Well, you know, I feel so left out. You know, I don't live anywhere near Massachusetts or Canada or anywhere. I feel that street legal.
Yeah, family was involved. My dad and my stepmother went with us to Canada, and my dad was my best man. My mom and my aunt and loads of family and friends were at the religious ceremony, and you know, Philip's family, and it was wonderful.
Well, I should say so. What a wonderful story. You know, one of the things we do here on this program is I think we establish pretty well how similar we are to every other community on earth. People, they don't really understand us. They don't get to see us in the media. We have a large number of straight listeners in addition to the GLBT community, and without fail, every evening we burst some stereotype or another. Ed, your story of the family and just, I think you just did that for us.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, they're the folks you turn to and you want to be able to turn to.
Well, I wish you well. I heartily wish you well. And I want to point out to you, too, as we close, Mr. Mason, that you don't have to have an interview solid on the show. Anytime you want to pick up the phone and give us a call and put out any information or some new word, you just feel free to do that. I'll put you on the show.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you very much, Peter.
Wonderful, sir, and good evening to you. Thank you for being on Strictly Confidential.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Mr. Mason, Mr. Fred D. Mason III from Baltimore. He and his partner, Philip, live there and have been together for 9 years. What an amazing story that is. A very articulate and obviously concerned man, as is Philip, who I have spoken to by email and by telephone. If Mr. Mason is elected, he will be the first openly gay member of the Baltimore City Council, District 11. And again, his site is fredmason3.com. That's fredmason3.com. And to have a look at all of the GLBT candidates, that's victoryfund.org. We will be having more guests from, as we were able to get them on the show. We'll be having more guests from Victory Fund. I think it's a wonderful organization and one that I had not heard of until I began doing this show. In fact, doing this show has opened up areas of the GLBT community that I had no idea existed. It's quite an education for yours truly, and I hope for you guys too. So we are where? We are a little past the top of the hour, and I think we should probably all take a little bit of a break. And so we'll do the top of the hour news.
This is the Quality News Network. Hurricane Dean is now a tropical storm. It was downgraded after a two-day pummeling of Mexico, hitting the central eastern coast at Veracruz today with 100 mile-per-hour winds before losing steam. The governor's declared a state of emergency in Ohio. Flooding has forced hundreds to evacuate their homes. Rescue crews are using boats to get people out. Similar situations are reported in Iowa, Minnesota, and Nebraska. Thunderstorms remain in the forecast. In a speech to the VFW today, President Bush voiced his support for the president of Iraq, Nouri al-Maliki, saying it's not up to the politicians in Washington to say whether he'll remain in his position. It's up to the Iraqi people, who now live in a democracy, not a dictatorship. 15 of Saddam Hussein's former aides began their trial for allegedly directing Saddam's army to kill 100,000 Shiites. The uprising was started by soldiers that deserted the army after their defeat in the first Gulf War. Key evidence in the trial are the dozens of mass graves since exhumed by the U.S. Army. 14 U.S. soldiers were killed in northern Iraq today. Military authorities and witnesses say their helicopter experienced mechanical problems. Japan's defense minister warned his country's opposition party pulling the Japanese support operation out of Afghanistan would send the wrong message to terrorists. Japan's mission ends November 1st if it is not renewed. Seattle officials are keeping a wary eye on two men passengers and crew have observed over the past few weeks asking too many questions concerning ferry boat operations and docking procedures. The Justice Department has ranked the Washington State ferry system among the nation's most sought-after targets for maritime terrorism. Congress approval rating is the lowest recorded in more than 30 years at 18%. President Bush's approval rating is holding steady at 32%. A fifth and final rescue hole was drilled at the Crandall Canyon coal mine in Utah today. Mine company CEO Bob Murray says the mine will now be closed and sealed, entombing the six missing miners. Engineers say two contributing factors that may have weakened the steel leading to the collapse of the Minneapolis bridge are the buildup of pigeon droppings and the application of de-icing chemicals. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
German scientists have discovered antioxidants in dark roasted coffee make the brew bitter, not caffeine, as originally suspected. In Beijing, authorities today raided a chopsticks factory and arrested its owner. The facility apparently collects used chopsticks and sells as many as 100,000 pairs daily without disinfecting them. Many mortgage lenders are closing up shop, and the National Association of Realtors says they expect a decline in membership for the first time in 10 years. However, many banks are still lending money to home buyers, including Union Bank of California, Bank of America, and Washington Mutual, which is in fact expanding as it lends its own money. The investors at Bank of America know a bargain when they see it. Today, they invested $2 billion in Countrywide Financial. B of A said, quote, in the current turmoil, the stock market has been underestimating the value in Countrywide's operations and assets, end quote. The preferred shares pay 7.25% annually. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 145 points at 13,236. That has also boosted the Asian markets. The NASDAQ was up 32 at 2552, and the S&P 500 gained 17 at 1464. Oil is down 31 cents at $69.26 a barrel on the sudden discovery of an excess supply. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
Hi-ho, Silver, on the horse named Strictly Confidential, and we're back for hour two of this crazy little thing called love that we formerly referred to as Strictly Confidential. The telephone number is 877, the number 4 head-on, or 304-658-3333. And what was that about unsterilized chopsticks? I'm still aghast at that. And how do you sterilize wooden chopsticks anyway? Old English? That's just the most appalling story. Leave it to our news service to come up with reselling previously used chopsticks. And by the way, we have a guest tomorrow night that I'm very much looking forward to. His name is Alex Natikin. And he is a leading authority on Italo Disco. Now, Italo Disco is kind of a large, it's not all Italian, it's European disco. He operates the website Euroflash.com. He is a leading authority on it. He and his wife live in Portland, Oregon, and I can't wait to talk to him because I used to DJ in Portland, Oregon. And I'll get to find out about all the clubs and all the latest that's going on up in Portland, a beautiful, beautiful place to be. And we have caller Jim with us on the show this evening. Welcome to Strictly Confidential, Jim.
Peter, good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well this evening. Good evening, sir. Thank you.
Good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. I can hear you great this time.
All right. I hear you 5x5.
Great.
My compliments on your guest.
What do you mean great?
I'm a former resident of Maryland myself. I've lived in Prince George's County for a number of years, and I worked in Washington. And that is, of course, not in his district of Maryland, but Baltimore. I used to travel in quite a bit, and I can certainly recognize a number of things that he said. and I applaud his efforts to try to ameliorate those conditions.
I do too. I think he did a wonderful job. He knew everything that we talked about. He was very sincere.
Quite comprehensive, quite inclusive. And listen, if I may segue into another topic, if we with your permission, I would like to for a brief moment.
Okay, does it involve what's her name? Tallulah Bankhead.
No, it does not, actually.
Okay. Then I'm not sure if we could get... Yes, by all means, Jim.
Yes,
but we'll go anywhere you want to go.
Well, you know, Maryland is the home to a lot of interesting people, among them being John Waters, our friend who's produced a number of movies with which you are quite familiar. But the one that I want to focus on and share with you, since you are such a Netflix junkie, is a film entitled Urbania, U-R-B-A-N-I-N-A.
I don't know it.
Pardon me?
I don't know that movie.
You should get that. And it is a story involving hate crimes and urban legends in New York City. And its principal star is Dan Futterman, who is a native of Silver Springs, Maryland.
Very interesting. I had no idea.
It stars Dan Futterman and Alan Cummings. And this is... an award-winning film produced in 2000, and it deals with the subject of hate crimes and things like that, as I said before earlier. And it is definitely worthy of being watched, and something I wanted to get across, if I may, please.
Wonderful. I'll definitely run that through the Netflix lookup motor and see if it comes up. It probably will. They seem to have just about everything.
And, let's see, one other thing I wanted to... I congratulate you on being able to effect your reconciliation with your local Arbok or whatever its name, Embark.
Yes, Embark with a Q. Go figure. The world's worst phone company, next to Verizon. I think they're fighting for first place. It was pretty grim.
You have often referred to me as like being like a box of chocolates.
Yes.
Well, I have a quick story I want to tell you. I thought that you might find amusing.
Thank you. Okay.
A couple of years ago, many years ago, when I lived in Columbia, South Carolina, some friends and I went out to dinner, and there was a guy with us who... sort of bashful and shy, but anyway, we went to dinner at this Chinese restaurant, and right next door to the Chinese restaurant was a lesbian bar called The Fortress, and they would have these shows and things like that, these drag shows and stuff, and country and western style. It's pretty interesting. But anyway, while we were waiting to be served, one of our guests told the waiter, he said, if you give us good service, our friend here, and this guy had a beard, he will give you free tickets to the show next door.
Okay.
And he's one of the stars.
I see.
And, you know, there was, I said, oh, thank you. And they went back, and they were speaking to themselves using their native tongue, Chinese, and you know, there was just all this ruckus coming over there. And finally, the waitress came over and looked at the guy with the beard and said, hello? You know, I want to ask you a question. And he said, well, what's that? He said, you do drag? What do you do about beard? And that poor boy, honestly and truly, God bless his soul. I could not believe he just looked at him like, you know, my Lord, what have you done to me next? He could have killed all of us. And by that time, we were just rolling in the floor, just laughing.
Oh, dear God, Jim. It reminds me of, remember the, in Rocky Horror, you know, they were having the dinner party, and how bizarre his guest list was. That reminds me of, that just makes me think of you as in terms of a bizarre dinner party.
Well... Well, with Dr. Frankenfurter and Magenta and and Meatloaf and all those other. Of course, Meatloaf was the guy who was, he basically became a very integral part of their dinner, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And the whole love, hate, and one from the vaults, I'll never get over that line. What camp? What camp? You gotta love it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have a lot of fond memories about that movie because the midnight showings and you know, dressing up and going in there and just having a good time with water pistols and cigarette lighters and things of that nature.
And throwing toast
is
my favorite. Yes, you just had to live through those times to fully appreciate. There's no explaining that. That was just something you had to be there for.
Well, you know, and oddly enough, this weekend, I have the video here. I rewatched Boys in the Band.
Oh, yes. I don't care if they call it balls. It's still Hairspray.
You know, the guy who played Harold, Leonard Frey, or yeah. Fry, he did a number of things in Fiddler and things like that. But I will never forget, and I think one of the better parts of that film, is when he finally arrived at the party late. And, of course, the host was extremely angry with him and declared you were supposed to arrive at this location at 8:30-9:00. And
yeah.
The way this guy said it, now I'll try to imitate him as best I can, and it was just incredible. He said, "What I am, Michael, is a 32-year-old pockmarked Jew fairy. And if I have to smoke a little grass in order to get up a little courage, in order to show my face to the world, it's no one's goddamn business but my own. And how are you this evening?"
I'd forgotten that line. That was some of the lines in that movie, it just would rip your soul. It'd take every mask off. I mean,
Crowley did a wonderful job. But the reason I bring that film up is its principal message was, we've got to stop hating ourselves. Because if you can stop hating yourself, then you can find a way for other people to love you as well.
Good point, Jim. Very good point. And as long as we follow their rules, that's what we're supposed to do, hate ourselves and do it on the down low. Everything.
Well, it was definitely a watershed date in filmography when they put that film on the screen in 1970. And anyway, I've digressed enough here and segued enough, and I'm going to let you get on with your show. And I appreciate your having me as your caller. And I
thank
hope you.
I will
continue to broadcast without any problems, technical or otherwise.
I do too, Jim. I think we're at the end of that at this point. I hope so. And I'll be sure and come up with our friend John Waters doing Walk Like a Man as one of our tracks for the evening. That's all.
Oh, have you seen his latest or one of the latest things he did? It's a Dirty Shame.
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, all of his films take place in Maryland.
Oh, do
he's
they?
He's like the Andy Warhol of Baltimore.
I had no idea. This is interesting.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I even met John in Baltimore.
Oh, my stars, you've met him and lived?
Oh, yeah. He's just a very unassuming person, and you'd never know. And he basically started out as just doing films on the top of his parents' home. He did one called Roman Candles, and it was about a marriage that took place between a biracial couple, and it was attended by the Ku Klux Klan. All this shot was a Super 8, 16 millimeter or 8 millimeter camera, and he did another one with Divine, and it was the Art Linkletter story, and it's about the suicide of Art Linkletter's daughter. And of course, Divine, to emulate suicide, jumps out of a top story window and falls on the ground.
I'll be darned.
But it ends with this, and it's an actual recording of Art Linkletter when he's appealing to his dead daughter to please contact him and his wife. And honest to God, Art Linkletter says, "Please call us, even if you have to call us, collect."
Oh, my.
So Maryland has produced a lot of good things for this country, and my compliments to your guests.
Yes, he was. He was wonderful. I certainly hope he wins that. We will. I'm going to be following that his race and the race of the other two folks who have been on so far, and announce those results as time goes on.
Well, listen. I wish him well, and I wish you well, and you take care of yourself. Okay.
Thank you, sir. Good evening to you, and thank you for calling, Jim.
Bye bye.
And bye bye. And we welcome Susan to the show. Re Susan, re hugs, re Strictly Confidential.
They're tied.
There
because
she is.
The reason I'm calling back in is, first of all, do you do any reading?
Any reading? Yes, I do. I am reading a book that I probably mentioned 3 weeks ago called Steeplejacking that I haven't finished yet, but it's about the takeover of the church by, you know, all Protestant
uh-huh.
churches by the think tanks and what have you. But yes, I do, and I love fiction too.
Okay, what I'm talking about, this is a book, it's fiction, and frankly, it's fluff. It's strictly pure enjoyment reading. It's by Suzanne Brockman, and the reason I'm, and it's called A Force of Nature. Now, the reason I'm mentioning it is because one of the central characters is gay. But the author wrote him about as far from stereotype as it's possible to get. And the nice thing is, he likes being gay.
Interesting.
He's
interesting.
Out. He's proud of being gay, but he's, he doesn't see anything wrong with being gay. So, he refuses to have anything, a long-term relationship with somebody who's in the closet.
Good for him. I think that's probably a good thing for a relationship.
Now, this particular character has showed up as a secondary character for 10 books. Her fans keep clamoring to bring him back. This guy is an FBI agent.
Oh, my stars. And what is the name of this book again, Susan?
The name of the book is called A Force of Nature. The author's name is Suzanne, Suzanne, and then Brockman, Brockmann.
Interesting.
True.
Yes.
It's called A Force of Nature. And the character I'm talking about, his name is Jules Cassidy.
Okay, I'm writing this down.
I'm one of the fans who has been clamoring to keep bringing this character back because he is just cool.
Wonderful. Well, I'm going to definitely check out the public library and that. And you may be horrified, but what I often do because time is so scarce lately is if there's a book that, if it's available as a books on tape, I will often get it that way so I can listen to it while I'm driving because it's a good 25, 30 minutes to town. And so, it's an hour of day of just driving for me to get
when
anywhere.
When I was
so
commuting, I did the same thing. I used an MP3 player, loaded the tapes into my MP3 player, stuck a earphone in my ear, and tootled off down the road.
Yeah. And I don't listen to the radio often when I'm driving. Sometimes I'll listen to NPR, but not often. It's just, me and Doggy, we're just contemplating our navels when we're driving. So it's kind of nice to have something going.
Yeah. But this whole character, this character developed, like I said, it started 10 books ago. And he's one of the main characters. She always has two. She started out, believe it or not, as a romance author. She's moved more or less into mainstream fiction. Although there is one scene with this character and a guy in the back of a limo. We won't go there then.
Okay.
But, anyway, she has the ability to write a scene so that just describing two people looking at each other across the room makes you want to get up and fan yourself.
I should think so.
You know, it's, she's that type of an author, and she's that good, but she's also, she doesn't neglect the character development, so you know what makes this guy tick.
Yes.
And she's just, you know, this guy is just wonderful. He's so cool. And it's
yeah.
so nice to see a GLBT character who's written without stereotype. You know, there's none of this effeminate crap or none of this, you know, all of them, I'm sure.
Yes, it does get awfully tiresome, the same old
yeah.
stereotypes. It gets awfully
you
old.
Know, there's not a hairdresser around.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a bloody FBI agent, for crying in the beer. He saves the world periodically.
Yeah, I've met gay firemen and gay policemen. I've never met a gay FBI agent. I met a gay Georgia State patrolman.
Yeah.
That's like the highway patrol. Oh, Lord, they're everywhere. If people only knew.
Sure. And why not a gay FBI agent? In fact, I would be willing to bet now that Hoover's out of there, they are all over the place in the FBI.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least. Which reminds me, I'll have to try and contact them again. I wanted to have someone on from the gay rodeo. You know, the whole rodeo circuit, too.
Yeah.
How
what
much fun
is
that?
It, who you sleep with as long as you can get on a bull for 8 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
Although, personally, I doubt the sanity of anybody who's stupid enough to get on a bull.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing that I don't think you're going to find me doing, but nonetheless, it could be a fun thing on the radio. You're not going to get me going
yeah.
down there.
Personally, I think anybody who gets on a bull is crazy, gay, straight, I don't care what. You're nuts.
I agree.
That's two tons of sheer meanness. They'll try and turn around and kid you.
Yeah, and then there's the calf roping and all the wear and tear. I wonder, those guys can't, they have to be like boxers after a period of time. They must be rattled in so many places they just have to rest.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought you would be interested in learning about that book. It would be a nice break from all the heavy-duty reading you and I both do. And, like I said, it's nice to see something that is not stereotyped.
Thank you. And I have written it down, A Force of Nature, and her last name is Brockman with two N's. And I'm
uh-huh.
going to run that through the library search engine after the show tonight, and it'll be on the next bookmobile out to this little town in the middle of nowhere where I still use a
okay.
bookmobile.
No problem. Just
thank
thought
you for
want
calling.
To hear about it. You
thank
have
you.
Fun and lots of pixie dust for you.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
And we have a short story here before we go to break it. This story was emailed to me, and it's amazing, really. It's in Brazil. And things are happening all over the world that so far outdistance us in terms of being progressive. You wonder what country we actually live in. You know, it's supposed to be the land of the free and being progressive. It's hard to believe, but... You know, for instance, this story isn't about this, but for instance, in Mexico, there's a story buried in fact somewhere that they've just now allowed a conjugal visit for same-sex partners in Mexican prisons, for crying out loud. You know, those places are supposed to be rough, you know. But nonetheless, this story is regarding Rio de Janeiro, and it's from Brazil, of course, and Brazil's public health system will begin providing free sex change operations. The public health system in Brazil will be providing free sex change operations in compliance with a court order, the health ministry said Friday. Can you believe this? The ministry spokesman is not going to appeal the ruling by a panel of federal judges, and they're giving the government 30 days to offer the procedure or face fines of $5,000 a day. The health minister was prompted by the judge's decision and is going to stick with it. The
Federal prosecutors have argued that sexual reassignment surgery is covered under a constitutional clause guaranteeing medical care as a basic right. From a biomedical perspective, transsexuality can be described as a sexual identity disturbance where individuals need to change their sexual designation or face serious consequences in their lives, including intense suffering, mutilation, and, in fact, suicide. The health ministry said they were going to leave it up to local health officials to decide who qualifies for the surgery and that priority will be given when you compare it with other operations, and they will assign the priority within the public health system. Patients have to be 21 years old, diagnosed as transsexuals, with no other personality disorders. Now, I hope they don't use that as a loophole. You know, growing up and being a transsexual in the way the planet is these days, you've got to end up with depression at least, you know, or chewing your fingernails or something. I don't know how you get through all that without. So I'm hoping that this clause of with no other personality disorders does not eliminate folks who are suffering from depression or have had bouts with depressions, what have you. They have to go through psychological evaluation for at least 2 years. And, of course, this is, I believe, fairly standard in counseling with people. And they're saying that transsexuals represent about 0.001% of Brazilian population. It's probably greatly underestimated because who counts them? I guess that's your best guess. They're saying that this minority, it's a question of life and death to have the surgery. So far, the measure hasn't prompted any opposition. The good citizens of Latin America are not rioting in the streets. The fundamentalist churches are not carrying signs and marching around the Ministry of Medicine. Brazil is generally more tolerant of homosexuality than other Latin American countries. And transvestites are featured prominently in celebrations like Carnival. There's some discrimination that still exists, of course. In fact, I have a documentation of a murder that happened down there not too long ago. But nonetheless, things are moving on, and that's our story from Rio de Janeiro. And as we go to a break, this is Peter Godbold. I'm your host on Strictly Confidential.
Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once did Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
From the Night Sound Studios, here's Charm City's very own, sassy and classy, Erica Richards.
Join us at Night Sounds every Saturday night at 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern for a unique musical experience. You'll hear featured segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications hosted by yours truly, Erica Richards. To request a dedication, please contact Erica Richards at billyshearsmusic.com. That's Erica with a K and Shears, Shears. To reach Billy Shears, direct your email to nightsoundswithans@billyshearsmusic.com. We'll be waiting for you this Saturday evening.
This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Hi, I'm V.
And I'm John.
And we're from Fierce, a community organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning youth of color in New York City.
For many years, the Cushion for Sheep here has been a place for our community, a space where we can all go and be ourselves.
A space where healthcare providers can come and provide free HIV testing and information to other services.
However, these services and safe space are being threatened.
To become a member of Fierce and help keep our Christopher Pierce safe for queer and trans people, contact us at 646-336-6789 or visit our website at fiercenyc.org.
Back from break, and welcome to the last segment of Strictly Confidential for this evening. And indeed, we are live, and I am so sorry that we have missed connections, but this is August the 22nd, and in fact, if you're listening to this program, you're listening to a live one. We have going to be back tomorrow night. We have a guest, and Friday night so far, it's just going to be us, and we're going to catch up on a lot of stories that we missed on Friday night, because there's been some downtime and the news just stacks up. I've been trying to decide whether to get into this Friday night or get into it tonight, because this is the sort of story that it's hard to wrap your head. This is all John Fox's fault, by the way. John Fox is entirely responsible for this. And in fact, the image that was burned into my brain of Karl Rove's father's penis, yes, correct. Naked pictures of Karl Rove's father's penis that is covered with, I think, 17 pieces of gold piercings. It's way past piercing and right on up into genital mutilation. But that's only a portion of the story. If I don't get to that, John covered it. But this got me off on a whole Rove rant. And, you know, just the very idea of Karl Rove. He is, you know, there was some downtime during the period when Karl Rove left the White House, so I'm not sure to what degree that this has been discussed, but I think I have some proof in this evening's little final segment here that, in fact, it was Karl Rove who Mr. Guckert / Gannon / hotmilitarystuds.com / the fake Talon news reporter, who is really a male whore, who stayed overnight in the White House on countless occasions with approval of the FBI. I think he was with Karl Rove, and in fact, let's just talk about it for a minute. Karl Rove, since the very beginning of time, has used the GLBT community and civil rights for us as a wedge issue. He first began running the anti-gay attacks back when Bush's was running for governor in Texas in the mid-1990s. That was when he accused Ann Richards of being a lesbian, which is one of the reasons that the Texas fundies got up on their high horse and that Ann Richards did not win that election against, as she referred to, poor George. It was Rove who was so closely coordinating the White House meetings between people like the Family Research Council and Dr. James Dobson of Focus on the Family. It was Rove who told the Ohio Secretary of State, Kenneth Blackwell, to support the anti-marriage amendment to turn out the voters in Ohio. And it was Rove who argued that supporting that amendment would benefit the Republican ticket. It was Rove who appeared on Fox News Sunday to tell everyone that the White House was planning to push for the federal marriage amendment. He enthusiastically backed the measure, said he was going to push for it. There is a fellow who named James Moore, wrote a book called The Architect, where he discusses Rove. That Rove has told his insiders that he does not consider himself a Christian, and that he had a father who was gay, and he regularly dealt with open gay Republicans. And, you know, the Republican Party is just filled with... It's hard to understand, to wrap your head around it, but what I'm telling you is true. And these gay Republicans work publicly to have the constitutional amendment passed that would ban same-sex marriage. So the man's not even a Christian yet. This is the group that he has wrapped around his finger. Now, Rove's father's name is Lewis, and we're going to hear more about Lewis in just a second here. If there's time, if we don't have time, we'll finish it up tomorrow. No, I'll read the rather Friday evening or tomorrow after our guest. Lewis died in Palm Springs while his son, Rove, was launching anti-gay issues left and right that led to the election of George Bush. Now, Lewis was actually Rove's adoptive father, but Rove didn't know that until Lewis divorced Rove's mother. Rove thought that Lewis was his real father until that divorce. And see, during the divorce, Lewis came out and lived in Palm Springs and had plenty of money and lots of guys around. And he was very much into body piercing. And never mind my personal opinion about body piercing. I probably have some people who are listening who have body piercings. If that makes you happy, whatever. But and so when I'm beating this up tonight, I'm talking about to the point that it, I'm talking about way over the top extreme body piercing is what I'm not talking about. Standard whatever gets pierced. Rove is well known to have been constantly hung around a bar called the Rooftop Bar at the Mayflower. It's directly across the street. It's a gay bar. It's directly across the street from the White House, and it's where all the Department of Justice pretty boys go to hang out after work for a drink. It's a gay bar that Karl Rove often frequented, and other more discreet gay clubs in the Washington, D.C. area. Karl was always there. He went through a very long period of time, you know, when he was not married. He finally did get married. But his wife, by the way, looks a lot like him, a big kind of a doughy sort of thing. And there are various books called, one's called A Fairy Godmother Rules, meaning Karl Rove and the Gay Republican Mafia. But anyway, getting back to Jeff Gannon, his name really wasn't Jeff Gannon, it was Guckert. Anyway, he was the fake journalist, you all know it. He was at the White House, and he would always ask the softball questions. He was a plant from something called Talon News. Now, Talon News was completely owned and operated by, it's a front from a Bush front, a company called, or an organization called GOP USA. And that is nothing more than the shell organization for GeorgeBush.com. And that was financed by a Texas-based Republican Christian group associated with Karl Rove. So, of course, Karl Rove got Jeff Gannon, the HotMilitaryStud.com fellow, into the White House for many overnight visits. And, of course, this man is, at the time he's doing these news reports, the White House, these fake news, at the time he's doing this, he's running a website called HotMilitaryStuds.com. And, you know, the FBI is supposed to vet people for, you know, going to news conferences. And, you know, it was obviously ordered by higher-ups that he'd be allowed through. There was the White House. It was Rove that got Gannon credentials to work with the fake news agency. It was called Talon News. And there's also Valerie Plame, the whole Valerie Plame thing. Gannon once referred to, which is actually Guckert, referred to a memo. I know it's confusing. It's the way these people want it to be. Referred to a memo that no other news outlet had, according to the Post. And so supposedly Gannon, or Guckert, was subpoenaed by the federal grand jury looking into the Plame thing. Although we heard very little about that. Well, today, or at least very recently, the Talon. Now, you have to understand that this is the Talon, which is the fake news organization, which is part of you know, the GOP USA, which is financed by GeorgeBush.com and the Republican Christians, the Talon comes out with a news report regarding Rove's departure from the White House. It says, Karl Rove, a longtime advisor to President Bush, announced resignation today amidst rumors that a new book by male homosexual prostitute, a male, would finger Rove as secretly gay. Now, why is this in the Talon? You have to wonder what they're setting people up for. It's hard to know whether to believe this or not. Here they refer to him as Jim Gannon, but his name is really Jeff Gannon, and his name is really, really Guckert. Jeff Gannon, formerly a reporter for Talon News and Rent Boy, is publishing a tell-all book in September, tentatively titled Behind Enemy Lines, and he's going to out Karl Rove. And Karl Rove apparently fears being outed by him, and his support of the HotMilitaryStuds.com site, which is the reason, or one of the reasons, that Rove is supposed to be leaving the White House. Yeah, I kind of think this is a little bit of BS, too, consider the sources from the Talon. It's long been rumored that Gannon gained White House briefing credentials by offering his services, meaning his escort stud services, to Karl Rove. So I think we could pretty much safely picture Karl Rove with his legs up in the air in front of Jeff Gannon, the hot military stud, night after night after night in the White House. Also in gay bars in Washington, D.C., Karl Rove was known as Miss Piggy. This is a fact. In Washington's more discreet gay bars, Karl Rove was well known and a frequent visitor, and the gays had named him the nickname of Miss Piggy. And it's unclear as to whether this refers to his appearance, like, you know, the doughboy, or his sexual preference. Give me a piggy, honey. It's hard to say, but anyway, that was his, hey girl, hey Miss Piggy, that was his name. And Karl Rove was, as I said earlier, frequently at the bar called the Mayflower, where the Department of Justice Pretty Boys went. Now, here's one of the Pretty Boys talking about the time Karl Rove tried to pick him up. He says he's in the hallway at Madison Square, and Karl Rove is approaching him with an entourage. And just as Karl Rove was passing, he slowed down. The guy is walking, you know, down the corridor. And he looked at me smiling, and it was a friendly smile of a man trying to make contact. Now, this guy knows what's up. This guy used to be a dancer, a stripper in male gay dance clubs in Chicago. He knew all about, you know, men being picked up by men. He said it was the smile of the same smile he used to get when the men were promising things like, you know, what do you want to be? You want to be an actor? I can help you. I know an agent. Come on over. I have a limo up front. You know the drill. So anyway, Karl Rove slows down the hall and swivels his head to look. He says, I like your Mac. Jesus Christ. I like your Mac. And then he said, that's a nice computer. He didn't nod. He just smiled. His head, you know, didn't, just sort of swiveled. And it was quite sincere, you know. He was trying to connect. I like your Mac. Can you imagine the vice president, not the vice, he might as well be, but this, you know, slowing down in the hall to tell a very good-looking man, I like your Mac. Yeah, it was no mystery as to what Karl Rove was trying to do. He was trying to connect. And he slowed down just long enough for the little smile, and then whammo, he was off. In other words, call me big boy. Well, that's one of the Department of Justice kids. Rove did it time and time again, political strategy of distorting and dividing gay folks' lives and ramping up the... It was Rove that got... They resulted in the gay unions, the laws banning them in 11 states. That was Rove. And then, to give you a contrast here, the one of the log cabin Republicans, it's a gay... Well, we know who they are, the log closet, was saying after the election, well, you know, even though he was so divisive against the gay community, the log cabin closet Republican was saying it's hard to argue with results. In other words, yeah, you know, to hell with the things that are going on in our communities and what we need. It's results. Lord have mercy. Anyway, there's more information, but none of it is really... Anyway, the bottom line is we're closing here soon, but pretty much... It was shameless, and he used it as a wedge issue. And the bottom line is that this is what set me off. John did a story about, I am the proud owner of Karl Rove's father's solid gold cock ring. Yes, Karl Rove's dad was a gay man. He was very much into body piercing and solid gold cock rings. He was in a community. He posed naked to show his private parts in a magazine. If you would like to read this article, you can simply Google the words proud owner Karl Rove. That's proud owner Karl Rove. There are no naked pictures of his father on this site, but I warn you, if you click on any of the links, one of them will take you to two close-up pictures of Karl Rove's daddy penis, studded with jewelry. And this is what set me off. And that was our friend John Fox found that, and so it's getting late in the evening. I know I need to, but I need to get wanted to get that out. And thank you so much for joining me here at Strictly Confidential. And here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to.
This is the Quality News Network. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez resigned this morning. In a brief statement, he thanked the American people and the president for allowing him to serve the public. Before helicoptering to New Mexico, President Bush said from his Texas ranch that he accepted Mr. Gonzalez's resignation reluctantly and that his good name was dragged through the mud for political reasons. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri Kamal al-Maliki said that yesterday he wants Hillary Clinton and Carl Levin to stop their, quote, severe interference in Iraq's domestic affairs, end quote. The two said that al-Maliki should be replaced when Iraq's parliament meets next month. Today